This is State of the Union, the DC 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union with 125,000 members and 50,000 retirees. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast on iTunes. Simply go to the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad and search for DC 37 State of the Union. You can check out our website, www.dc37.net. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you have any comments about our show, or if you are a DC 37 member with an event that you would like to promote through a community group, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. That's stateoftheunion@dc37.net. If you are trying to promote an event, please send your email to us 2 weeks in advance so that we have time to put it on the air. Tonight, we have in the studio with us DC 37 Education Fund Administrator Diallo Shabazz. Actually, back in the studio, Diallo has been with us before. And we're going to talk about the DC 37 Education Fund classes and programs for 2019. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you, Chris.
I know that DC 37 has made a priority of strengthening and building the Education Fund to make it possible for members to have access to, you know, courses and information and education that will further their careers. I know that takes a lot to do. Let's talk about that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so over the past 50 years, the DC 37 Education Fund has provided education and training benefits to our members. This is something that our members want and need. They need training to continue to be proficient in their current job. So we're talking about being able to make sure they stay up with current technology. Making sure that they can continue to get the licenses and certifications they need to move forward in their career, making sure that they have access to college. This is something that we're really focusing on in 2019. People say, I want to go back and get an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree or a master's degree. And so we have a number of programs and resources to make it easier for them to do that.
And we have created alliances as well to make that easier to do. And that's a challenge to bring education to our members where they are. Talk a little bit about the partnerships we've got.
Yeah, 125,000 members throughout the city who are living and working all over the city. And it's really important, especially for our members that, you know, that work traditional schedule, 9 to 5, 9 to 6. At that point in time, if they say, I want to get additional training, the question is, what is the easiest way for them to do that and be a responsible spouse, parent, someone who's the head of a household? So we try to make sure that our courses are available where people live and work. We've partnered with a half dozen CUNY schools throughout the city. We're working with Hostos Community College in the Bronx. We're working with Queens College. We're working with LaGuardia Community College, BMCC, Borough of Manhattan Community College in Manhattan. We're working with the College of Staten Island. We're working with Megar Evers College for a number of years. We want to make sure that no matter where you are in the city, you can go and get access to this. And we're not only talking about public colleges and universities. I mean, some of our members have been enrolled at some private colleges as well. Right. And just recently, as of last week, one of the schools we work with for a long time is Monroe College, which is located in the Bronx. They provided a lot of training for our accounting programs, for health programs, so our members could get their CNA license. We have people take foreign language courses with them, ESL, English as a second language. They've recently agreed to provide a 20% discount to all DC 37 members who take classes there. And this is huge because private college is sometimes a little bit more expensive than public college. Mm-hmm. But Monroe has done a great job of getting our members through those courses. And when we're talking about education benefits, the education benefits that we manage for our members are only for our members. So only our members can take a course through us. But what Monroe has done is something great. They've said that not only does that 20% discount apply to a DC 37 member, if they have a spouse who wants to take a college course, they can get that 20% discount as well. And if they have a child who's going to college, they also qualify for that discount. And so this is really an opportunity for us to make these benefits available to the entire family, to DC 37 members community.
Okay, we're going to do this a couple of times during this segment. The best way for someone who hears this and says, hey, I want to know what my options are. What's the best way to get in touch with us?
All of our information is online. They can go to our website, dc37.net, Florida-sized education. Go to dc37.net, click on education. You'll see all of our courses listed. You can register for our courses online. We have a number of college counselors that are available. If you are someone who says, I'm thinking about going back to school, but I'm not necessarily sure what I should be taking, I'm not sure what my financial aid options would be, you can schedule a meeting with one of our counselors through the website. It gives you an opportunity to come down and talk to our folks so they can help give you a plan to move forward in your career.
And the things that we're doing in terms of using technology, I know that we were talking about something called digital badging. And I may have jumped ahead in this conversation, but talk about what digital badging is and how that connects the education to the training to the job.
No, absolutely. I mean, there was a point in time when technology was the future. You know, technology is today.
Right, absolutely.
Just last year, we had a request come in from, and you know, we have a thousand different job titles for members in DC 37. We had a request come in from cooks who work in school kitchens who said they need more training in technology. Now, you would think that cooks in school kitchens, that they're not necessarily utilizing technology. It's like, no, that's a stove or maybe a microwave technology. But no, actually, because the Department of Education, school food, is now requiring them to use some technology to track inventory, is now requiring them to use technology so that they can utilize some of the healthier recipes they're using so that students have access to healthier food. Now they have to access technology in the workplace. And so no matter what job you work in, there's a technology component to it. We also have people who have gone out and they get what are called continuing education credits. You know, so every couple years, they have to go back and get retrained to make sure that they're up on what the most contemporary thinking is in their industries. You know, so that could be paralegals, it could be accountants, it could be librarians. Obviously, health technology and health information always changes. So these folks have to go back and get additional training. What happens sometimes is they'll get called out by their job. Their job will say, I need you to prove to me that you did the training that was required over the past year or so. And they'll call us and say, hey, I remember that course that I took through the education fund a couple of years ago. Can you send me a copy of my certificate?
No.
No, we can't. We don't have cutting edge document management. What we really need to do is, instead of keeping better track of all of your paper certificates, is figure out a way to help you keep track of them yourself. And
right.
So what we did was we partnered with a company called Credly.com. And Credly.com is a company that has a digital badging platform, so that if you take a training, you can get like a digital badge, like a representation of that, where if you click on it, someone sends it to you an email, you click on it, it opens up and it shows you a copy of your certificate. It lists everything that you've earned. And so it has all the information you need to show to your current or prospective employer to qualify you for that position. And in the same way we were just talking about social media right before the show, social media is incredibly important. Everyone talks about Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter and Instagram. The digital badging platform that we now have for DC 37 looks like a social media platform. You log in with your ID, your picture is there, it opens up, and it shows everything that you've earned through your trainings. And now, because digital badging is becoming such an industry standard, there are actually places where you can link that stuff to your Facebook profile or to your LinkedIn profile.
Right.
Or you can put a link on your resume. So you can say, I took this course, and you have a web link. And so if someone receives your resume in an email, they can click on that and open it up and see exactly where you are.
That is so smart.
It's a much more efficient way of tracking not only what you've learned, but what you need to know next, because you'll see what badges are missing for you to move forward in your career.
Now, again, the DC 37 as an institution has made this a priority, because according to the demographics I've seen, there are a lot of city workers who are going to be retiring in the next 10 years. And there are going to be a lot of new city workers who are going to want to be, you know, rising up the ranks. And they're going to need to be smart, and they're going to need somebody to help them, and that's what the union's about.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about almost like 100,000 jobs that are going to turn over over the next 5-10 years.
It's amazing.
Yeah, the labor union in New York City, and people, this is an interesting conversation when people have about labor unions. You know, people often say that labor unions are outdated, that we're the least innovative of American organizations and institutions, and there's somewhat of a misnomer there. You know, the labor movement created the weekend. You know, right. Anybody who's ever said TGIF or thank God it's Friday should be thanking the labor movement.
Right.
The labor movement created the 9-to-5 workday. The labor movement created like the concept of benefits. It's an incredibly innovative role that labor has played in the world. But no institution, no type of organization is innovative forever. You know, Apple, for example, Apple is right now the $1 trillion company, is seen as one of the most innovative companies in the world. But there's a point in time where Apple almost went out of business.
Right.
You know, they came onto the scene with these green screen computers that were in every classroom. And then they went through a period where they just really weren't leading the way in technology. No organization is innovative forever. And now in the 21st century, I think the labor is in a process of reinventing itself. You know, we are in a process of attracting new members. We thought that this Janus case, the Supreme Court case that we lost last year, people thought it was going to be a death blow. We've had more members sign up now than ever before. We're looking at technology in ways that it can help transform our training and our workforce. We're keeping tabs on the impact of artificial intelligence and machine learning on jobs. We know that a lot of jobs are being automated. They're going to look very differently in the very near future than they have for a very long time. And so we're keeping tabs on these things. And I think that labor in this mission of bringing people together and thinking critically about what the future of work will be the place in the 21st century where some of the most innovative solutions and some of the best job protections for workers come out of.
We're talking with Diallo Shabazz. Diallo is the administrator of the DC 37 Education Fund. Again, if you're trying to get in touch with, if you are a DC 37 member and you are trying to figure out how to get closer to education, the way to do that is
go on our website, dc37.net. You can click on education. All of our courses and resources are listed there. You can also always call us, of course. Our phone number is 212-815-1700. Again, that's 212-815-1700. There's always somewhere there to answer the phone and get you scheduled for an appointment with one of our education counselors.
We've got a minute left. What is the most what are the most popular courses? I mean, is there any way of saying, well, you know, the people who really get turned on by X or Y or Z?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, obviously there are popular courses within certain industries. You know, I mean, in the health sector, I mean, we do have a lot of people that prefer our certified nursing assistant courses and our EKG phlebotomy courses because those are really kind of on-ramps to a career in health. We have a lot of people that like our foreign language classes. For free, of course, of DC 37 members, we provide training in Spanish, in French, in Mandarin, in American Sign Language. You know, we have a lot of paraprofessionals that work in schools that come back to us and say, there are some students in our school who may be deaf or hard of hearing. There's students in our schools who just transferred here that don't have a strong command of the English language. Obviously, Spanish and French are pretty popular. Mandarin is increasingly becoming more popular. But, you know,
easy language.
No, it's a tonal language, you know, but some of our members who've taken these classes have become like the de facto translators in their schools. They're not tasked with this as a part of their everyday jobs, but it's an important part of what they do.
Diallo Shabazz is the administrator of the DC 37 Education Fund. It is always a pleasure to have you here. You have an open door at the studio. Please come in, even on cold days like this one, and we'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
Back. This is State of the Union, the DC 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM, and I'm Chris Policano. Joining us by phone is an old friend of the show. I like that expression, an old friend of the show. Also, a friend of mine. Donald Cohen is the executive director of In the Public Interest, and tonight he's going to talk to us about the recent L.A. teacher strike, some of the bigger ramifications of that strike, and the privatization of public schools. And he's joining us by phone from Los Angeles. So welcome back, sir.
Thanks, Chris. Always great to be here.
What I loved about the L.A. teacher strike is that it didn't – well, that's a strange expression. What I loved about the strike what was heartening about the strike was the fact that it received so much public support, and they made it clear, at least from 3,000 miles away, that this wasn't just about wages. This was about something bigger. And why don't we talk about what that bigger was?
Yeah, well, the top line bigger was that this is about public education, that, you know, there is broad, not just support for, but belief in an understanding in the importance of public education. And, you know, and what we mean by public education is, you know, every child in America gets a, you know, has the same chance to get a, you know, a great education, you know, and to make the community better, to make their lives better. It's really, really fundamental to who we are as people. That's really at the top level what that strike became about and was about. It was not just about wages. There, you know, there's, in any contract negotiations, there's wages being discussed, but it was also about class size. It was about the creation of what are being called community schools, where schools are much more connected and integrated into the community and the other services and public programs that that children need to succeed in life. And it was about the troubling trend of the privatization of public education, which is really about the growth of charter schools in America. And it's a complicated subject at some level, because people think charter schools, are you for them, you're against them, and that's really not the issue. Is that there, if you look at what's happened in the trend, they're growing fast. The laws need, the laws haven't changed in many years. And on the trajectory we are on in many places, we're going to have two education systems, a public and a private.
Now, you just said it's a complicated issue. You are the founder and executive director of a National Resource and Policy Center on Privatization. You're one of the smartest guys in the room about this. What exactly is the problem with the way that charter schools, with the proliferation of charter schools? What is, in a nutshell, why that's bad or wrong or troublesome?
Well, I'll say it at two levels. At the first level, it's sort of there's a model. There's two models. There's the public model, where everyone gets equal chance, and we struggle to make those public systems better all the time. And then there's the market model, that are based on the beliefs of sort of competition and, you know, the winners succeed, the losers fail.
Right.
And so what the fundamental idea about charters, let me just go back. The original idea about charters is very good. Right. It came out of the American, you know, Albert Shanker from New York, right?
Right.
American Federation of Teachers leader.
Right.
Create, you know, schools where you could innovate and experiment and explore new ideas about how on pedagogy and how to teach children, and then take those ideas and share them, you know, with the world, right? Little laboratories of innovation. But what it's become is this kind of competitive market-based system where a charter can get, you know, gets created, a group of people, or often supported by a company or a large organization, creates a charter, and then they are competing for, you know, enrollees, for students. And the idea being, in their view, in the view of those that, you know, promote this is, well, competition's a good thing. It'll make the public schools better, you know, perhaps a little bit, but it'll also, if the charter school fails, then we'll just close it. That's how markets work. You know, let people walk with their feet.
Right, right.
But there's all sorts of really bad things that happen, you know, really distorted things that happen. You're in New York, and a couple of years ago, there's a woman, I'm sure you know, named Eva Moskowitz, who runs Success Academies. Mm-hmm. And there was a front page article in the New York Times where they had found what was referred to as the got to go list. And what that meant is, you know, if you're competing in the market, you want to make sure you succeed. And what you, and one of the things that, you know, you, that charter schools can do and can do is either overtly or subtly push out the kids
who are struggling.
Who are struggling, who are going to bring their, you know, their, you know, their scores down, the school's scores down. And that's exactly what was happening. Eva Moskowitz had a, you know, her schools had a list of kids that they wanted out because they were a problem, and they were going to bring down the overall grades and marks of the school. And that kind of stuff happens.
And are we talking about competing for the same resources as well? I mean, are we talking about the Success Academy isn't just going to you know, Apple computer and saying fund us. It is taking money from the public system, and then it is saying we can deal, and they're not copping to the fact that they're dealing with the best of the best, if you will, or folks
right.
who are not struggling, or and then the under-resourced public system has to deal with the kid who is struggling to get past. Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, and it's actually a little bit worse than that even. So, yes, yeah, so it's all public money. So someone goes to a student goes to a charter school, the money that comes with the student from the state or wherever goes with the student to the charter school.
Gotcha.
So they get, it's all public money. Now, it, you know, some charter schools will then raise additional funds, but set that aside. So here's the bigger problem, though. All the money, so let's say a school gets $4,000 ADA, you know, or $5,000 ADA, if it, you know, for their kid, you know, the average daily attendance. The problem is all the money goes, but all the cost doesn't. So this is actually bleeding school districts. So, for example, because we did some studies out here in California. So for every student that went to a charter school in Los Angeles, say, the district lost $4,000. Per student, because all the money, all the revenue went to the kid, you know, went to the school with the child, which is fine. But, you know, you know, one kid goes, you don't fire a teacher, you don't close a building, you don't turn off the air conditioner, you don't do all that stuff. So what's striking about that is those that believe in the competitive system, the last thing you would want to do, they say they believe in public education, the last thing you'd want to do was to make the public schools better is weaken them, is take away their resources.
Right,
that's
absolutely.
Exactly what happens.
So where are we with these strikes around the? I'm looking at strikes in L.A., in teachers in Virginia, Colorado, elsewhere in California are voicing mm-hmm. their demands for better working conditions. In some cases, they're threatening to strike. Are these moves strengthening public education?
I think so. I think, you know, even from last year as well, in places, you know, unusual, in places we would never expect, West Virginia, Oklahoma, you know, there's a sense that we need to support public education
right.
and that we are not resourcing it as a people. We're not paying for it. So what's happening? Class sizes are going up. That's not good for teachers as a working conditions. It's definitely not good for students, you know, because what's the most important thing, you know, most important factor of a good, you know, educational experience is a personal relationship with your teachers.
Right, absolutely.
You know, where you can actually learn. And so that's what's going on here, is we in America, because of, you know, tax-cutting fever and the attack on government and all this other stuff, you know, we're bleeding our system, and this, and it's affecting, you know, our, the real world.
I'm looking at a note that says that there was a resolution that calls for a local moratorium on new charter schools in Los Angeles as a result of the resolution of the strike. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, that was one of the, that was a negotiated, it's in the contract, in the negotiated contract that adopted by both the, you know, the district and the teachers now. And what it is a, it's a non-binding resolution. Because the city, the state law in California does not allow a district to cap the number of charters. And in fact, it doesn't allow districts to do a lot of things. And so the idea there is to build momentum so that we can get some, so we can get the state law to rationalize a system. In California, the law that created charter schools was, you know, was passed in 1992. And it was updated a little bit and a few years later, but there was never an idea, you know, for the original idea, laboratories of innovation. No one ever conceived of the fact that there'd be 1,400 charter schools in the state now and growing fast. And so the resolution is symbolic to a great extent, but to say something needs to be done, and Los Angeles needs to be in that, you know, sort of in the district, the union, the community needs to be in the fight, as it were, to get the state law up to date.
I want to shift gears. We've got about 2 minutes left, and there was an article, I think last week or the week before, in These Times magazine. The headline attracted me. It says, after three decades, privatization has been proven a failure. Let's bury it for good. How far away are we from doing that?
We're pretty far.
Yeah, okay.
I hate to say it,
but the case has been made. I mean, in
oh, yeah, but no, but it, well, we're pretty far. But this is one of these things that, you know, you got. We have 2 minutes, right?
Right. You got 2 minutes. Now explain the world to me.
Yeah, right. So, at some level, there's a growing awareness and awakening that private interest getting control of public services and goods and assets is not a good thing.
Okay.
Right.
So the case has been made. Is what.
The
yes.
case has been made, and it continues to be made. But on the other level, we have ideologues, like, right. you know, right-wing ideologues, and we have conservative, and we have corporations who are actively, aggressively trying to get their hands on tax money. So, you know, we're in the fight. You know, it's like that's democracy, I guess, but, you know, we just need to level the playing field.
What's new?
What's new?
Yeah, I mean, what's new in the world of... in the public interest?
Well, one thing, again, is with a short amount of time, we started to look at what are called social impact bonds. You know, you all may know, be familiar with that, because one of the famous, you know, stories and failures was at Rikers there. It's a way for Wall Street to get their hands on some of the, you know, to get their hands on and control of public social services. I've been appointed to a federal commission that meets the first time in March. You know, I was appointed by Senator Schumer, and then but the Republicans had the majority, so they have a majority on the commission, and we're advising the distribution of resources for these social impact bonds. It's going to be interesting.
Donald Cohen is the founder and executive director of In the Public Interest, National Resource and Policy Center on Privatization and Responsible Contracting. He has been a guest on the past. He will be a guest again. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. And we're just about out of time, bro.
Thanks again.
Okay. That's about it for this evening. I want to thank DC 37 Education Fund Administrator Diallo Shabazz and Donald Cohen. And before we go, one announcement. DC 37 continues its month-long celebration of Black history with a political action event on Thursday, February 14th at 6 p.m. at Union Headquarters. For more information, please call 212-815-1550. And for details on the local celebrations of Black History Month, visit www.dc37.net. I'm Chris Policano. The engineer is Andrea Minocchio. The producer is Rudy Orozco. If you have any comments about this program or any of our shows, or you have an event you want to promote, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. Until next time, ciao.